Welcome back, everyone, to the Disaster Tough podcast, where we share insights into the big plays and right calls of leadership. We dive deep into the stories, lessons learned, and ideas that will help you in the field. Let's go.
Welcome back to the Disaster Tough podcast. I'm your host, John Scardina. I am so excited for this episode. Last week, we were talking about organizational emergency management and how it looks like within the organization. We talked to Wells Fargo, saw how they were doing their operation. Now we get to see from a completely different angle. It's really fun. Abe Diaz is running disaster relief programs there at Amazon, and they are pre-staging disaster supplies all over the globe to be able to help out during disasters. So again, it's now that outreach perspective. It's a really amazing thing to be able to look at. So without any further ado, let me bring Abe onto the podcast. Abe, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Welcome. Oh, thank you.
So let's talk about Amazon and your perspective. Technically, you're an engineer, but you're running these disaster relief programs. Huge organization with lots of moving parts. For the sake of my audience, can you just go into a little bit about your background and your perspective on disaster relief?
None. This is absolutely not what I studied, what I trained for, what I expected to ever be doing in my life. I've been a geek all my life. I have a bachelor's in computer engineering. I've been writing software all my life, and then sort of transitioned to being a technical program manager and sort of like still building software across multiple industries like mobile or news or just video distribution. While I was at Amazon in 2017, we had this huge Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, and I'm Puerto Rican. My family's Puerto Rican. My mom and dad, everybody's there. It was one of those 1-in-100-year disasters, and I was, you know, honestly frustrated and sort of scared, and it was all this flood of emotions that we're going through. So I sent out an email to all of the Seattle employees for Amazon, which I think at that point were something like, I don't know, 16,000 or 20,000, a lot of them started replying back, and they said, "Hey, you should talk to this person. Hey, you should talk to this lady." And I'm like, "Well, who's this person?" So I, very naively, showed up in the office and said, "Hey, I'm Abe. I'm Puerto Rican. I speak the language. I'm a TPM. How can I help?" And that person is now my manager. In 2017, I volunteered, and this was our very first relief flight. She said, "Well, we're doing this. We've never done it before. We're going to send a plane to Puerto Rico with relief supplies for Hurricane Maria." And I'm like, "I'm in." I went back to my manager and I said, "Hey, I need to take off for a little while." He's like, "What?" And I said, "Like, yeah. I just have to do this." And super supportive, he said, "Like, go. We got you." And for the next, 2 weeks, we work tirelessly on this, and it was an incredible experience to see how we could pull product from inventory, find the right things that were being requested, you know, get that pack and palletized. We had employees all over the nation helping us, everybody from like Washington State to Florida, if you want to think about it that way. We got all the supplies in trucks and get it to where we were packing the plane. And you know, it's a lot of work, and it's a really exhausting experience. But as we're loading the plane, I noticed the pallets, they look dirty to me, and I'm like, "What is this?" And we like zoom into the pictures, and it's like, "Oh, this, well, they wrote something on them." So it's like, what do we, and lo and behold, where we were packing the plane was in Florida. We have a big population of people from Puerto Rico working in Amazon. From Florida, and they started writing messages like, you know, "Puerto Rico, you got it," or "Amazon's here with you." And I just like, I started tearing like there's no tomorrow. At that moment, I realized, wow, it's not just products. It's not just logistics. It's, we have an incredible employee base that really wants to support in any way that they can. And being able to create the opportunity for them to participate with what they are best at, what they do every day, I think it was a magical moment. So the plane landed. It was so heavy. We didn't have enough fuel to to come back. We had to stop, refuel, and then come back to the U.S. That's how heavy it was. But it was an incredible experience. And then, I mean, 10 minutes after we landed, my manager said, "Do you want to do it all over again?" And I'm like, "What?" We're thinking of another one for Hurricane Irma at that point, and that was in USPI. So within a span of 3 weeks, we did the first two planes back to back, and it was a drug. Honestly, it was one of those things like, wow, if I can ever do this again, you know, just let me know. But I went back to my normal work, and 2 years later, you know, the my work kind of shifted to another location, and at that point my family couldn't sort of move there, and so I reached out back to my manager, said, "Hey, if you ever have a role in this space, just let me know." And it was one of those things where, like, seriously, like, it couldn't be. It's a combination of serendipity, luck, all that, whatever you want to call it, right? But preparation plus opportunity equals luck. So she said, "Well, I'm actually opening a role." So I interviewed along with a bunch of other people, and I got the job. So in 2019, I joined this role full time, and I've been doing this since then. In 2019, we were doing, I don't know, maybe 10, 20 disasters a year. You know, we're donating hundreds of thousands of items, but I'm really proud to say that we've been able to take that program and grow it to the point where now we have participated in over 145 disasters worldwide, donated over 24 million items. That's not cash, that's items. Yeah. Done over 9 relief flights to different locations all around the world, including the most recent one last year with, sadly, the Turkey-Syria earthquake. We sent 2 planes, one from the U.S. and one from Europe, with supplies that were just not available in country. So we've been able to do a lot.
The L3Harris Extreme 400P radio solves problems and is specifically designed for emergency services. How do we know? We field tested it with medical, urban search and rescue, and collapsed and confined structures. This radio is amazingly tough. Check out the L3Harris Extreme 400P radio at L3Harris.com right now. If you served in the military, you've probably worn Proper Apparel. Proper Apparel is now reaching out to first responders and those who love the outdoors. Check out Proper Apparel from the outdoors to the EOC, wear proper. How do you spell Doberman Emergency Management? EOP, OEP, HVA, HMP, Thyra, TTX, Drone, PDA. Whenever you need an expert, Doberman Emergency Management field experts are there for support. Contact an expert at DobermanEMG.com today.
Does that answer the question? I think that's
I love it. First of all, when you said no and then you immediately went into like several years of experience, I think that's so funny when you're talking about that. But I was in Hurricane Harvey in 2017, and my team... we were running, gosh, full steam, and you're talking about a couple of weeks. I was there for like months, and that feeling doesn't go away. No matter how many times, I'm sure you felt it too, as you go out and you go out and you go out and help people, and you get to see the impacts of that, it means everything. At the same time, Hurricane Maria was incredibly difficult to watch from Texas because we were running full steam. Another team went out there. The famous story said they all got fired. You know, we really wanted to be out there. We wanted to do things for people and to hear, you know, stories like yourself and, you know, other people who've gone out there and just took over, you know, try to find something to do. I think that's like the makeup of all great people is when you see something happening in your world and you try to do something. I love the preparation plus opportunity equals luck thing. I mean, that's huge. At the same time, you're obviously passionate about what you're doing and you want to keep helping and you're interviewing for these things. And so you're seeking out those opportunities as well, right? When you're looking at from like the Amazon perspective of disasters, there are something like, I don't know, like 100,000 incidents that happen globally every year. Those incidents could be, you know, as small as a house fire to the type one catastrophic disaster like a Hurricane Maria or Hurricane, Harvey. How does Amazon, because you still have your full-time job, you still have things to do, you're a business, you still have to make money. How does Amazon go about trying to determine, for example, Turkey? Okay, we got to help Turkey. We want to help, but like, what's the appropriate course of action there? How do you figure that out?
Yeah, There's something happening pretty much every single day around the world. So where my team is sort of the central team that tackles really large scale disasters. We have operations all over the world. So at smaller scale and the smaller sort of like more regional locations, those areas and those, you know, fulfillment centers and those delivery stations, they can support hyperlocally. And that's sort of what we've done. We've created a criteria. And I tell everybody who's thinking about creating a disaster relief program to create a framework of how and where and when you want to participate. So for Amazon, we've created a criteria from 1 to 5. And we say, okay, events that are like really large or like basically international support is needed, this is where my team can come in. Because there's a need for us to coordinate across all of Amazon, right? We're talking about planes, trucks, you know, vans, product. There's so much that needs to happen. So for the smaller disasters, we have the regional leads that they will, you know, with our empowerment. So like, hey, something happened in last year was a great example. Something happened in Oklahoma. There was a series of tornadoes. This is 20 miles away from where we have a large fulfillment center. You know, we reached out to the site lead, said, hey, we know your community is impacted. We want to support. Here's organizations we already were talking to. Here's what they need, you know, can you help us out? And they're like, missions to go. So, you know, here's your green lit to support that event. And then here's what the needs and the organizations are. So like within 24 hours, they already had delivered trucks with products with what they asked. And they were 15 minutes away from the warehouse that they needed them. So when it's things at that scale, where we have a footprint, our employees and our site leads are just all over that. So we appreciate that. And then when it's something larger, let's say, you know, Hurricane Ian in Florida or the Maui wildfires last year, that's where sort of my team kind of comes in.
So you do that. So in my world, we'd call that type one incidents. So like your decision matrices, you basically follow within the type one or the largest scale. Do you guys call that a 5? Did I catch that right? Are you the 5 or are you the 1?
No, it sort of flips. So we got like 1 through. If you want to think about it, you got 1 to 5, right? And sort of the smaller ones, you know, level 5 would be like your local fire. Level 2 might be something where there's a lot of media attention, just very little that we can actually participate and support with. Level 3 would be like your regional tornadoes. Level 4 would be like your hurricane impacting a state. And then level 5 would be sort of like international global events.
Yeah, okay, copy. Yeah, so that helps me kind of frame the reference here. So you're looking at type one incidents, or you're looking at the category fives, whatever, and you're
4 and 5.
Okay. So the global perspective is 4 and 5. And by the way, I do want to talk about the fulfillment center, because I think I'm in St. Louis. I think on the other side of the border, a couple of years ago, tornadoes also hit in Illinois, and I think it hit at Amazon fulfillment center, but I could be wrong. Anyways, if we're talking about that large scale stuff, the amount of, like, it's basically like a logistics mission, right? Like, you have so many things that you have to put in place. You name the planes, the personnel, the trucks, even, like, all that stuff. Once you get onto site, in my world, we have different mechanisms in place for receiving items. For example, like, if they want to do a food mission in most disasters now, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they bring the food. The Southern Baptists prepare the food. The Red Cross hands out the food to the individuals. Like, they have a process for that now. When you bring in supply, what types of supply is standard for Amazon? And if I'm an emergency manager listening to this and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, there might be an Amazon plane landing with supplies, how does that coordination happen? Are you already doing that with something like FEMA or the Red Cross? How does your relationships work on the local level?
Yeah, I think part of preparation, right, is having the right relationships and keeping that constant communication in the off season, if you want to think about it that way. So we have great partnerships with, you know, both local government, federal government, and nonprofit relief organizations. So for us, we don't want to break the golden rule, right? We want to help, not harm. And what that means is we don't participate in that second disaster, which is a bunch of unwanted, unrequested, this is not what I wanted, you know, products landing in a place where there's no space for it. They have to, like, resort it. So everything that we do, we work backwards. That's like an Amazon philosophy, working backwards from the customer. So we go to the Red Cross, we go to, say, the children, we go to multiple organizations and say, what do you need? Tell me exactly what you need in the quantity that you need it and how you need it packed. We will make that happen. So for us, we're not saying, we're not the big corporate partners saying, hey, I got a truckload of X. Do you want it? Yes or no? That's like the opposite. That's that's the contrarian ethos of what we're going for. What we want to know is like, what are you not able to find? Because sometimes what happens also is in places like, this might be more in the international city, right? Like last year's Turkey quake, there was a lot of consumable products that were available in country still. But there was a lot of very specialized products like winter shelter tents because it was really cold. That's what was missing. So we rather focus our efforts on the gaps that are not available in that kind of the local economy in bring those donations forward. So we do the same thing here in the United States and, you know, wherever the disaster is. So we'll work backwards from the list of needs from organizations and say, okay, you wanted 4,000, you know, diapers, 300 size one, 400 size two, and that's exactly what you're going to get.
When I switched over from operations to like planning and really like the data science perspective, I had no idea previous that myself and a lot of my counterparts, when we thought we were being specific, we were not being specific at all, right? We're like, hey, I need diapers. And somebody would be like, what kind of diapers do you need? Did you find that when you started getting into this world that there was like almost like a coaching? Did you find that like, we don't know what specific means yet. Do you find that to be real for you, or where do you land on that?
This is one of the things great question, because I say this a lot, right? If you really want support from corporate partners, you have to be extremely specific. If you're not specific, you're just wasting everybody's time in the sense, because they're going to have to ask you additional questions and you're going to have to like figure out those answers. And right, so two things that I avoid is, number one, requests that are like very generic. It's like, we need diapers. How many? All of them. Whoa, hold on. That makes me pause. Yeah. They said like, okay, there's this thing called the Amazon, you know, the hug of death, if you want to think about it that way, which is like, there's so much product that you're like, this is way more than what we could support in the tiny little warehouse that we have for this disaster. It's like, okay, let's work backwards. Like, what's the size of the population that you're serving? You know, oh, we have a shelter here, there's 400 people. Okay, you probably don't need 10,000 diapers. You probably need way less than that, right? And then the other thing we can do is say, hey, we're here for you. Doesn't mean we're going to be here just one time. What do you need this week? So yes, to your point, John, many times we have to go back and say, I need you to tell me what brand, what size, or even better, since Amazon is such a large company, we have such a large amount of product, can you send me the link in the Amazon website?
Oh, that's awesome.
That will save me so much time. So now what we do is sometimes we get an Excel file, like you know, mature and sort of experienced organizations, they'll send us an Excel file that says, I need 200 of that link, 400 of that link. And that makes so much easier, because I know they went and they look at the requirements for that product space. They know that they need the flashlights with the batteries that are AAA. I don't want to send the flashlight with the wrong batteries. So they, you know, a lot of that pre-work is sort of happening in that clarification and putting that in paper, putting that on a form that we all can understand with that same language and vocabulary. It just makes things run so much more efficiently.
There was a training I used to do for like trying to get the ops people to be more specific, and I would show a clip from Parks and Rec. Did you ever watch Parks and Rec? There's a scene where Ron says, give me all the eggs and bacon you have, and then he's like, I think you thought I meant a lot of eggs and bacon. Give me all the eggs. It's like these specific questions. It's funny, like if people are out of practice trying to ask for specific things, what they think is specific is sometimes a huge distraction from what we actually need. And what I found to be beneficial is kind of doing what you're doing right now. And this could apply for working with you or really across the field. So for anybody, this is like probably pretty good intel. It's like starting backwards is always a great place to start. Like you were talking about, do you really need 10,000 diapers? It's a small town and you have 3,000 people in the town. So let's work backwards from that. And so the working backwards things helps out a lot for sure.
we also look at data, right? So we can go to the, at least in the United States, we can go to the American Red Cross website and look at the shelters open and what's the population in each one of them. If I look at a disaster, there's 200 people in shelters right now, because it's maybe a few days after it, and the needs that we're getting are much bigger. It makes us questions like, why are they outside the shelter, which has happened to? Are they, is there something happening that we don't know? Are they somewhere else? Right. So like it being able to look at data quickly helps us assess, like, are we serving the community the best way that we can? Is there a lag in the needs that we're seeing? Or are these ahead of what is happening on the ground? And some of the data is incongruent. So it really helps us sort of like double check what we're doing. The other thing that with regards to data is, you know, if you work with anybody who's in emergency management or any kind of disaster organization, they'll say, if you've been through one disaster, you've been through one disaster. And that's very true. They're all different in a way. But what we noticed looking at the data is there was a good chunk of the product that was exactly the same year after year after year, even in disasters that were different. Right? So like a hurricane is very different from a wildfire. Yes. But a lot of the products that were being requested were the same. So we took that data and said, okay, what if we could get this ready ahead of time and reduce that burden on you? We understand there's 20% that's going to be very specialized, very specific, something that's going to be an outlier that we were not expecting. Okay, great. So we'll tackle those as those come. But for the other 20, we started working with organizations since 2021 and said, okay, we're going to get ahead of this and we're going to start a proactive program. So now we are working with partners to get their list of items, sort of assess them, verify them, look at the requirements, and get products that are up to the specs that they need, and then purchase them, pack them, palletize them, and on top of that, have the documentation ready for a lot of those. So whenever another hurricane happens, right, we can move very quickly. And the best story that I can think of for that is in 2017 when I was volunteering and doing that hurricane, you know, Maria plane. It was about 2 weeks before we landed. In 2022, when Hurricane Fiona happened, we landed in 5 days. And it was because most of the product was ready to go.
Yeah.
I know that we could have done it a lot faster, right? Mm-hmm. So the next one, we probably could respond a lot faster. So it's how can we use data to inform the decisions on what needs to be prepared for and what needs to be reacted to.
Do you have I want to say relationship is probably not the right word. Do you either coordinate or understand what are in the national stockpiles for disaster response?
Not really. And there's good reason for it. I think there's different set of products and they're working with local government. They're supporting sometimes locations or populations that are not the same ones that some of the nonprofit partners that we're working with are. So at this point, I think there's an opportunity, obviously, but we don't want to interfere with that. And in fact, when sometimes we are responding to requests like water, we get that a lot. Something happened in Florida, they need water. We understand that there's a radius of impact to the supply chain that we don't want to interrupt. We understand that local government, FEMA, and a bunch of others are purchasing water in, you know, the event happened in Miami, they're buying it in Tampa or in Jacksonville. Like, we're buying the water in, I don't know, Missouri or Georgia or much further away. So we don't impact that. So what we do is separate and independent, but it's really working backwards from the data of the nonprofits on the ground who are working with us.
Yeah, you're talking about I'm going to go back to a comment you made about every disaster is different. I've heard that so much. And I appreciate that you're like, hey, after a few of these, though, there are recurring needs. And what I found is that sometimes on my side of the house, because they maybe I'm going to word this here in a fun way, because there isn't a strong emphasis on data analysis, sometimes every disaster does feel totally different. And while people are different and needs may be different, I know where the water is going to go in a flood. It's going to go to the lowest area. I know what a wildfire is going to do. I know what wind impacts. And so from the even the supply chain,
I know the needs of people, right? Like we can get better at that. And so I think it's fascinating that, you know, a guy with an engineer background who probably understands a lot more of data science and data analysis, who's looking at needs and not trying to create waste or trying to be harmful, is already starting to figure out, you know, within a few years, okay, we can really pre-stage a lot of this stuff and probably pre-stage our processes as well. We know how long it's going to take to get out to things. And so from that perspective, if you are going to give advice to your external partners or people who are in the field who may either not understand or have that kind of background, what advice would you give to them of saying like, hey, this is probably how you can become a little bit more efficient in your disaster response? Do you, like, especially because I'm talking long-winded here, but Puerto Rican, Hurricane Maria, I was very frustrated watching that from afar. I didn't have family there. And you got involved because of those frustrations and because you wanted to help, I'm sure. From an efficiency standpoint, how can we help you do better so that we can, you know, recover faster from disaster? It's long-winded, but hopefully you got it.
Yeah. Well, I'll try. I think you have to look at if you want to think about it this way, the disaster life cycle, right? So before the event, there's preparedness, you know, event happens, there's response, relief, recovery. That could be months or years, depending on the location and the community. And then you go into like resilience and mitigation. And then all over again, right? So for each one of those phases, what are the needs? What are your gaps? What can you do to push each one of those a little more every year? Because data suggests that the faster you can recover, like the faster you can get products to a location, recovery starts sooner, right?
Sure.
The more money that you can pour into preparedness, the less that you actually have to do relief and recovery. You're prepared. So mm-hmm. Puerto Rico is a great example where after Hurricane Maria, you look at the demand curve of like solar panels or people who are saying, I need to be independent. I need to find a way to sort of self-service my family, right? Or my school or whatever. That's something that if it wasn't for that disaster, like that trend probably wouldn't have caught up with it. So I think look at what phases you are operating in. If you're somebody who was EM or like really in that response release, like think about what are the... Like, look, try to document an event. See, like, what happened? What did we need? And I know that this is always impossible. You're like, I'll do it later, and later never comes. But the best that you can, try to document, you know, what were the needs? What was the process that you followed? And then, like, stack that against, like, the next one. At least once you have two of those, you're like, oh, okay, these two things were equal. These two things were equal. That was completely different. And the things that are equal, see how you can then either improve those specific processes or find ways where you can remove that decision-making after the event happens and bring that forward. It's like, okay, if that happens again, we know that that's going to be situation X. So we will do X. We will deploy these products. We will do this from this warehouse or location. Making those decisions ahead of time means you just save mental bandwidth and you probably save also effort for the people on the ground.
I love decision making matrices. I work with a lot of stadiums, I work with universities, I work with the DOD, and the more I can get them to say, if X happens, I will do Y before, everybody's life gets easier. It is scary sad when I get into a situation and I know somebody has a ton of experience and they're like, oh, we'll just figure it out as we go. I'm like, why though? Because you already know exactly what you're doing. And sometimes it's helping people pull that out. Like they actually do know what they're doing. And so they're it's not as mental taxing as they think it might be. However, I think that sometimes people are afraid that because they think every disaster is different, that they'll have to like look at the totality of everything and remake a decision. But the reality is like, it is a really small example, but a simple one. If there's 4 inches of snow on the ground, you cancel school, right? You don't have to, the superintendent doesn't have to think about that. If, you know, you have 2 million people in Hurricane Matthew that are going to be without power, you're going to call for evacuations, right? Like whatever the systems are,
I think it's incredibly intelligent to put processes in place so that you don't have to remake the decisions you know you're already going to have to make. And from an Amazon perspective, what are some, because you're dealing with the four and fives, what are some of the things that you know 100% specifically that will trigger a response from you?
Well, if it's a natural disaster that's happening that's at that scale, it is very likely we're going to be deploying to it. Unless it's a location or a country where we just absolutely can't, we will do our very best to support. And we supported, you know, events, like I said, worldwide in Africa, in India, in Nepal, in Turkey, in Mexico, Guatemala. Like, we've done a lot. So to your point is, yes, having that sort of like triggers process and the triggers database ready, and if X happens then we do Y, that reduces a lot of time. For us, we're a corporation who can get product to a lot of people very quickly. We're just leveraging the same processes, technology, the same people to a different use case. So for us, we know we're going to participate. It's how quickly can we understand what the needs are on the ground and then just react to it.
And as far as I know, maybe I'm jumping the gun here a little bit, but you just made your processes a little bit easier in Europe, right? Because you're already staging in so many places. You're doing that now by the time this comes out, right? So talk about how that staging process works, because that's pretty exciting news.
Well, so what happened was, you know, like I said, we look at the data, same products year after year after year. So the decision we can make, because we are the ones supporting and saying, hey, how can I take this off your shoulders for our organization? So we're going to work with each one of them. Each one of them has very different lists, right? So an organization that's doing meal distribution, they need clamshells and they need utensils, versus another organization who might need diapers and another one who might need tents and cots, right? So each list is different. So we can work backwards from their list of items and then buy them, pack them, palletize them, get the documentation ready. So what we did in 21 was we created the first hub. We call it our disaster relief hub in the United States. And we've seen great success with that. We have expanded that over the last 3 years. And now we have 12 of those around the world, in Japan, India, Australia. And then next week, by the time this comes out, we're going to be opening our very first disaster relief hub in Europe, which is going to allow us to very quickly get products to, you know, Europe, Middle East, North Africa, and that sort of region, if it was needed.
Do you guys go only through natural disasters, or if there was like worldwide conflict, if, you know, X happened or, you know, ABC happened, do you also support civilian populations during those events as well?
Yeah, I think for us, what we notice is in natural disasters is where you can go really quickly. Right. Mm-hmm. And some of the other situations you have to be very careful and mindful and what you do. And what we're best at is what we notice is in natural disasters. It doesn't mean we haven't participated in other situations like the global, you know, pandemic in 2020. We did a lot of work there. So for us, is we look at what we are best at and what situations we can respond with the speed of Amazon. And those are the ones that we prioritize.
Okay. From a personal perspective, we all, on my side, we all have our least and favorite disaster type. What is your least and favorite disaster? Do you have one? You're like, oh, if this happens, I want to be there.
Well, least favorite is, I would say, anything with snow. Just because, like, you can't, there's no trucks can be on the road, no cars can be on the road. It's very hard to deliver, you know, supplies when everybody has to stay indoors. So I would say that's probably our least preferred, if you want to frame it that way, or the one where it's just a little tricky. And then not favorite, but I think the ones that I can say we can participate with the most are the ones that are notice events, and like hurricane sort of falls into that, because you get like a couple of days before it's going to land. So what we start doing is now with our, you know, hubs, is we can take product and ask organizations, do you want us to pre-stage this and bring it from, say, Atlanta to North Florida, so it's only 4 hours away from where the hurricane's going to make, you know, landfall. So we can do things ahead of the storm. We can prepare for it. And so, like, I think for those notice events, obviously, there's a lot more that can be done, is what I would say.
You are definitely a professional in the way you respond to that. I'm very simple. I hate tornadoes. I live in a place with tornadoes, but I hate tornadoes. Give me anything else, even the snow, earthquakes. I was in Japan in 2006 or 7 when they had a smaller earthquake, and I never experienced them before because I grew up in Ohio, and I thought my roommate was shaking me, like trying to get me to wake up, and I was like, "What are you doing?" And I'm in my sleep, and all of a sudden I'm waking up, and I'm like riding this thing, and I thought it was a blast. So, and then I had to deal with the 2011 tsunami, which was rough. But in terms of the notice things and pre-staging, it sounds like Amazon is just knocking it out. It's exciting that you guys are opening a disaster relief in Europe, so you can be able to help out more locations even faster. For your final thoughts on the podcast, you get to talk to basically the entire field. Our field's pretty small. On this kind of topic, right? What would be your last, you know, either hurrah or, hey, please think of this because we want to help out, we want to be involved kind of moment? What would you say to them?
I think number one is, as they say on the plane, you know, put your mask on first. Don't forget that. I see a lot of fatigue from donors, from people on the ground, just, you know, it's a lot. It's been a very, very active set of years in the past, since like 2020 specifically, right? It's just been one after the other.
Yeah.
So be kinder to yourself and others as much as you can. I do some crazy stuff. I'm all into, you know, saunas and ice baths. And, you know, not for everybody, but it really helps me keep myself sane. But after taking care of yourself, I would say, you know, in the field is be specific as much as you can. And then for things or somebody who is brand new, I would say find ways to volunteer. There's a lot of times where people say, like, I want to do that. And it's not until you, like, literally see it with your own eyes and experience it that you go, okay, maybe that wasn't for me. Or, oh, I see where I can double down. I see where I can participate and be more efficient. So a lot of people will say, like, how can I, you know, what can I do? So then, listen, you do what you are most interested in. You know, like, don't get me wrong. I think if you can go to your local food bank and donate an hour of your time and help them pack boxes so you can help the community, that's amazing. But if you're an accountant and you can donate an hour of your accounting time to an organization that hasn't been able to file their taxes in 3 years because they just don't have the time or resources, that 1 hour of your time probably served them, you know, a much bigger ROI than anything else that you could do. So consider what you are best at and then finding ways on you know, offering that to the organizations that need it the most for the causes that you care the most about.
I'm going to re-say that one more time. I'm so used to Japan. Abe, you are honestly a great example of a servant leader, and you started off as just wanting to help out in Puerto Rico, and you moved into so many great opportunities to be able to help people out. And honestly, it's a true pleasure to have you on our podcast. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
All right. So everybody, if you got something out of this podcast episode, which you should have, because you got to learn from a different type of perspective, you got to see how Amazon works. They're doing all kinds of things to help out with disaster relief in the field. If you want to learn more about how Amazon's doing it, or you just have ideas that you figured out in the field, how you have been able to replicate success as you prepare for disaster response, please let us know in the comments. Please reach out to us. If there's something specific for Abe, we can definitely pass it on to him. And we'll see you for the next one. Peace.